Hi, and welcome to the Magazine Rack on Chris. I'm Steve Sacco. Today I'll be reading from Discover Magazine, the June 2021 edition of Discover Magazine. And this week we're going to start with Natural Born Liars. Humans deceive, and so do animals. Here's why we fall for trickery and what happens when lies go unchecked. And this is by Aja Radin. We tend to assume that deliberately telling lies is some sort of pernicious aberration unique to liars. Perhaps it's the result of a mental defect or, more likely, some sort of moral failing. It is not. Everything living lies, including you. Before you dismiss the thought, consider this. Human deception and evasion are no different than the animal equivalent of camouflage, spots, and stripes. Charm is our very own version of frilly fins and peacock feathers. And the effort to deceive is an evolutionary arms race as old as organic life. Take the blue morpho butterfly, for example. It's the one with the dazzling iridescent sky blue wings. First lie, that dazzling blue color isn't actually there. It's just an optical illusion, created by blue light selectively reflected off of millions of mirror-like microscopic gray scales. The reverse side of that wing has no scales and are dark, dull brown. That vivid blue only exists in your mind or your eyes, depending on how you see it. But real or reflected, the colors actually help them to hide in plain sight, just not via camouflage. Rather, the butterflies do their best hiding in midair, where they should be at their most vulnerable. As they fly, the blue morpho flaps their wings rapidly back and forth between visible dark brown and difficult-to-see reflected sky blue. The effect makes them seem, though a perpetual glitch, to appear and disappear. This strange game of hide-and-seek is called a flashing defense, and it has not anything to do with the blending in. Rather, it exploits the inability of many species, particularly the birds, to keep their eyes fixed on a moving object that does not move in a continuous line. From caterpillars to con artists, everything living lies. The capacity for deceit is an important asset, honed over millions of generations, and it is an essential part of communication, one that comes sometimes with a deadly consequence. The big lie. In the evolution of deceit, language only came about quite recently, billions of years after more basic tools of the con. There's even some debate that humans may have developed language specifically to manipulate each other in newer and cleverer ways. It's just the latest innovation in a billion-year-old chess game. As Robert Trivers, professor of anthropology and biological sciences at Rutgers University, puts it, our most prized possession, language, not only strengthens our ability to lie, but greatly extends its range. Consider, when you lie with your scent, your pattern, or your petals, you can only lie about what you are, and you can only lie about the here and now. You lie with words, and you can lie about anything, anyone, anywhere. You can rewrite the facts, past, present, and future. Human speech allows deceptions to transcend space and time. Take, for example, the intricate con carried out by Gregor MacGregor, a charming heir to a noble family from Scotland in the 18th century. Like many noble families at the time, the MacGregors had seen better days. So Gregor joined the military to seek fortune and glory, mostly fortune. In October of 1822, after a decade of fighting and traveling through the jungles of South America, MacGregor returned to England. But he didn't come home as a mere soldier or a decorated war hero. He returned to London as Gregor I, Prince of the Caribbean nation of Poyais. Immediately, MacGregor began a widespread media campaign to educate the public about Poyais. He published articles about Poyais in respected journals, describing the land's unspoiled beauty and excessive natural resources. The prose was accompanied by detailed illustrations, which he claimed he'd brought back from the country itself. These pictures, fresh water and fertile soil for cultivation. There were forests, full of green and game and exotic flora and fauna. The riverbeds were lined with big chunks of gold and numerous other natural resources, including precious gems, all there for the taking. MacGregor even brought a local back from Poyas, whom he declared an ambassador, as well as a copy of the Poyasian Constitution and a very land grant and proclamation making him a cazique of Poyas. He claimed the natives were friendly, that the cities were brimming with culture, and that the land was ripe for development and a Christian colonial ruler, a proposition that was particularly appealing in his native Scotland, as the country had no colonies of its own. Does this sound too good to be true? Well, yes, clearly. The whole idea of Poyas being conveniently perfect in every regard, and that anyone believed that for a second, sounds foolish. Well, now. The problem with perfection. The default setting in humans is to accept the reality that has been presented to us, so much so that a little kink in our thinking, called honesty bias, constitutes one of 12 basic cognitive biases that circumscribe rational thought. These are systemic errors in cognition that occurs in processing and deciphering information that we glean from the world around us. They're not mistakes or logical fallacies. They're hardwired limitations in our thought process. Honesty bias is a sort of mental shortcut our brains take when we accept anything we've presented as true, if there are no obvious contradictions. For example, if you ask someone the time and they look at their watch and tell you it's 3 p.m., well, you believe them. You didn't reflectively question whether they're lying to you or whether their watch is wrong, unless, of course, it's too dark out to be 3 o'clock, or you have reason to suspect that the person wants you to be late. Though cognitive bias tends to skew our judgment badly in some situations, they exist for a reason. Social psychologists believe they help us process information more effectively. Honesty bias may leave you open to being deceived, but by the numbers, the vast majority of information you've presented is true. Not having to reason out every bit of data you encounter is a valuable neurological ability, a shortcut that allows us to function and learn. Consider, if someone told you that there was a commercial rocket launch this year, taking a shuttle full of paying customers to the moon, would you believe them? You probably would. People believe in the reality that they're presented with, and this is ours. Many of us have lived our whole lives in the post-moon landing era, where stories about rocket launches and companies like SpaceX will dominate the headlines. Even if Poyas still sounds too good to be true, so did the rest of the New World in the 18th and 19th century. MacGregor lived in the era of empire building via seized foreign territories, country-sized land claims based on very little, and unimaginable stolen riches. India was real, with its gleaming golden palaces and massive gemstones. The Near East was real, with its vast oceans of sand and ancient stone cities. Australia was real, with its bizarre, exotic flora and fauna. So why not Poyas? Setting sail. MacGregor succeeded in getting 7 massive ships worth of colonists to leave their homes and embark on a journey to the New World, having spent or exchanged everything they had to start a new life in His Highness's Gregor I's now famous paradise. In September of 1822 and January of 1823, the first two ships, the Honduras Packet and the Kinnerly Castle, embarked for Poyas carrying hundreds of passengers, and still more ships back in England were filling with people who were preparing to set sail. But when the Honduras Packet reached land, the colonists had no idea where they were, except that it definitely was not what MacGregor had described. They assumed they had landed in the wrong location as they found no ready-made cities, no valuable resources, no farmable land, not even edible food. And there was no friendly natives to meet them. In fact, there were no signs of any other inhabitants at all. Even the climate was a lie. The section of coast where they landed, which is modern-day Honduras, was a hot, swampy, mosquito-infested jungle, so uninhabitable that it remains largely undeveloped to this day. They did their best to build shelters out of sticks and mud and to find fresh water, but a majority of the stranded settlers died from starvation, exposure, and tropical diseases like yellow fever and malaria on this isolated, dangerous, and mostly deserted mosquito coast. It wasn't until a small group of survivors, all that was left, was rescued by a British ship from a nearby colony in Belize and taken back to London that the disaster was exposed. MacGregor had not merely oversold Poyas's virtues or exaggerated his ownership or authority in the matter. He'd made up the entire country. Poyas never existed at all. Mind games. There's a lot of funny quirks in our minds that explains both neurologically and psychologically why this sort of cascading failure of basic reason would occur. First and foremost, this is pesky honesty bias. Authority bias is also often at work. This mechanism compels us to trust and believe those who seem to have more power or influence, including mere social stature. Essentially, we're wired to believe and trust our so-called betters. For instance, you're more likely to believe a doctor who tells you that you're sick than a friend who tells you the same thing. This makes sense. We default to generally trusting and believing people who we deem to be authority figures. But what's really interesting is that you'd also be more likely to believe the doctor than your friend if you were to tell them you know how to program the computer in your car, even if you knew that that was nothing near true. The same holds true for politicians and so-called experts of any kind, even celebrities. We unconsciously assume that they're better informed than we are, and that we are more inclined to take what they say on faith. It's why celebrity product endorsements are so valuable to companies. You're hardwired to trust that a famous actress really does know what fruit juice will prevent aging, or that your favorite musician really does have the inside track on which charities are legitimate. We don't believe them based on substantial reasoning. We believe them because our brain has taken a shortcut. And like honesty bias, authority bias benefits us, individually and as a cooperative group. We don't need to know everything about our math teacher to trust them when they show us long division. But it's also an open loophole in our thought process that can backfire or be deliberately taken advantage of by bad actors. The fact that the aristocracy class of England and Scotland fell for the con of the self-proclaimed Prince of Poyas isn't confusing or absurd. It's predictable, and it's evidence that the brains were functioning normally. Aja Radin, the writer of this article, is a New York Times bestselling author. Her expertise sits at the intersection of academic history, industry experience, and scientific perspective. And it's also, this article is taken from The Truth About Lies from Aja Radin. And it says, adapted from The Truth About Lies, The Illusion of Honesty and the Evolution of Deceit by Aja Radin, copyright 2021 by the author and reprinted by permission of St. Martin's Press. Next we have Truth Serum. It's a question and answer interview. He spent years researching misinformation. Now this psychologist makes online games to vaccinate the public against fake news. And this is by Alex Orlando. COVID-19 isn't the only thing that spread like wildfire in 2020. So did the conspiracy theories about it. Misleading claims that the virus was a political hoax or that the vaccine harbors microchips to allow the government to surveil its citizens blazed across social media. By December, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube had banned COVID-19 vaccine misinformation on their platforms. But this flare-up of falsehoods wasn't just harmless noise. A survey by the Pew Research Center last November found that 21% of U.S. adults don't plan on getting vaccinated and remain pretty certain that more information won't change their mind. It's troubling to think that simply debunking these claims, essentially exposing them as untrue, is not enough to shift some people's perceptions. But what if there was a way to prime people to spot this information before they see it? In other words, what if there was a way to create a sort of vaccine for fake news? That's the hope of Sander van Linden, a social psychologist at the University of Cambridge. While much of his research revolves around human judgment and decision-making, in recent years he's turned his attention to the problem of fake news. It's no secret that misinformation or information has the potential to spread like a virus online. And disinformation, which is incorrect information that's circulated on purpose, is particularly virulent. After learning that fake news peddlers employ many of the same persuasive tactics over and over, van der Linden set out to inoculate people by showing them how these strategies work. Or as he puts it, once you know what goes into the sausage, you probably don't want to eat it. Instead of a physical shot, his delivery method of choice is online games. In 2018, van der Linden and his colleagues launched Bad News, in which players assume the mantle of a fake news tycoon. They're tasked with impersonating public figures, stoking fear, and discrediting opponents to amass as many social media followers as possible. Similarly, in Go Viral, another project that came out in 2020 from the Cambridge researchers, players use fear-mongering and emotionally charged language about the pandemic to make messages go viral on a simulated social media network. Van der Linden, his latest game, which is Harmony Square, made in partnership with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Agency, tasks the player with using disinformation to pit residents of a small, quiet neighborhood against one another. Discover Magazine recently caught up with van der Linden to learn more about how the false information spreads, why inoculating people against misinformation works, and how exactly the sausage gets made. First question: how did you first become interested in misinformation and fighting the spread of fake news? He says, initially, the interest in my specialty of influence and persuasion came from the fact that, like many social psychologists, I was interested in propaganda and how that works, particularly following events like World War II and other human atrocities that are happening around the world, where people get persuaded of very dangerous ideas. That process of how people are influenced by information and then act on it in a way that's detrimental to others was really my larger driver for studying this. In 2015, before the U.S. election, my colleagues and I were studying disinformation about climate change. Specifically, we started to figure out that there are a lot of commonalities in this technique that are being used to deceive people on the issue of climate change. There are a lot of specific myths and hoaxes and conspiracies out there, but they all use these reoccurring techniques. The logical next question for us was, how could we inoculate people against that? We wanted to pre-expose people to weakened doses of these manipulation techniques that are used in misinformation to see if that strengthens their intellectual antibodies against it. Next question. Where did the idea come from that you could create a psychological vaccine against misinformation? He says, there's this guy called Bill McGuire, who in the early 1950s and 1960s was studying at Yale University. It was just after the war, and they were interested in how propaganda works. They kind of informally termed this a vaccine against brainwash. Although they never tested it on misinformation, they did some early experiments that asks, what if you could vaccinate people against persuasive attacks by administering a weakened dose of it? And it had some very compelling early data on this. It's so relevant now, it seems like the ultimate metaphor. I found it so surprising that people had completely forgotten about this. And that's why I reintroduced the metaphor and started expanding on it. Because what's interesting is that at the time there was no internet. They weren't thinking about how to exactly do this in the real world. Next question. What made you think that an online game could be the best way to deliver this vaccine? He says, this really happened in my conversations with John Rosenbeek. He was a student at Cambridge studying Russian media propaganda. He was really interested in what they were doing. One of the things that emerged from my chats with John was the idea that we wanted to scale it up. We wanted to vaccinate people against the underlying techniques and not specific misinformation. And we also thought that would generate less reaction from people. It's one thing for a scientist to tell people climate change is real, but people who don't believe in climate change don't really want to hear that. So we needed another way. So tell me more about the misinformation tactics that you and your colleagues learned about when you studied fake news. What techniques will players arm themselves with when they play this bad news? He says, we started to have the goal of mapping out the techniques that underpin most fake news and misinformation. That took us about a year to read up and really try to distill all of the key techniques. We landed on a few, including polarizing people, conspiracy theories, impersonation, trolling other people, discrediting, things like that. You're fake news, so we distilled it. The first thing you could do in a game is to impersonate Donald Trump and declare war on North Korea over Twitter. That's really meant to illustrate the impersonation technique more broadly. What's interesting is that we found most people actually miss this at the beginning because Trump's Twitter handle is manipulated so it's an N instead of an M. But even though it's all fictional in the game, it's based on real-world events. And this one was really based on a story from Warren Buffett's account. Someone started a fake account impersonating Warren Buffett with one T instead of two T's. They started out doing all sorts of nonsense. The account garnered hundreds of thousands of followers in a very short amount of time. So it's very influential. That's what we try to inoculate people against in the first level. The other big one is polarization. That's probably the most difficult one for people because everyone has some preference on politics. But what we try to do explicitly in a game is to tell people that it doesn't really matter what side you're on. It's about driving two sides apart. That's really the strategy. So, whenever you feel riled up about an issue, try to reflect on the fact that some people are just trying to stir things up. Next question. You've published several studies about the effectiveness of bad news after its release. Did any of your findings surprise you? He says, it went in different stages, as anything with this sort of new intervention does. The first study we did, we had about 10,000 people who opted into the game that is still live. We run new experiments all the time as we get responses on a daily basis from people who are still playing the game. What we found is that people were able to spot the fake news better after playing, so they thought fake news was less reliable. One of the biggest questions we got was how long the psychological effects last. It's unlike a biological vaccine, where in some cases, after a few shots, you have lifelong immunity. We didn't expect that to work in the same way. We started following up with people week after week and launching misinformation attacks on them, to see how they're doing after they played the game. After the initial treatment, they'll get notifications for follow-up surveys in which they're only confronted with a list of fake Twitter posts and asked to rate how reliable or accurate they find them and how likely they would be to share them. So it's a simulated social media feed, not a real one. Misinformation attacks sounds a bit nefarious, but what we mean is that people are confronted with this misinformation. What we find in the first study was that vaccination effect was still there after 2 months with these follow-ups. But in one of the conditions, we found that if we didn't follow up with people, the effect was still positive, but it was decayed significantly. So we started hypothesizing that maybe when we're following up with people, we're actually boosting their immune response and prompting them to memorize what they've learned. That's something that we're currently investigating further, because there are different ways of delivering these booster shots. Question: are you worried these games might create a new crop of fake news peddlers and conspiracy theorists by showing people how misinformation works? He says, it's probably the question we get asked the most. Are you worried about teaching people how to spread fake news? We approach this quite deliberately. There are two motives for why people spread fake news intentionally. One is financial and one is political. So one thing we don't do in the games is we don't show people how to make money off of fake news. And the games are very non-political. We allow people to make fun of things across political spectrum and pick sides. Even if one out of a million people gets the idea, if it vaccinates 900,000 people, the benefits probably largely outweigh the risks. We don't think it's a substantial risk in the sense that we're not teaching people anything new. This stuff is already out there. We're just exposing it to people. It's like a magic trick where we're trying to show people how the trick works so they're not duped by it again. Very few people want to go out and become a magician. Last question. In your 2020 study on the long-term effectiveness of inoculating against misinformation, you end by paraphrasing Professor Severus Snape from the Harry Potter series. Quote, "Your defenses must be as flexible and inventive as the arts you seek to undo," unquote. Why does that resonate with you? He says the idea is that misinformation is evolving. If you think of it as a virus, it has new strains. Whereas impersonating was simple at the beginning, now we have deep fakes. It's getting more complex, it's getting new features, and it's becoming smarter. The counter strategies, the fact-checking and the debunking, haven't been doing the same thing. It's very static, and there's become no advancement there. The reason I started using that phrase is because it just hit me, and I realized that if we want to fight the dark arts, we need to make our own solution as flexible and inventive as what they are doing. Because what they're doing is evolving and getting more specific and using big data and getting more sophisticated, and we are not. Specifically, in terms of games, when Snape says flexible and inventive, it really resonated with me that we make it to go beyond science. We need to make it fun and entertaining and scalable. And we need to be flexible and inventive in that it needs to be real time. We need to be able to adjust our interventions. Because only then can we try to undo some of the ways in which the dark arts of persuasion and manipulation are quickly evolving. Alex Orlando, the writer of this article, is an associate editor at Discover Magazine. Well, that's it for this installment of the Magazine Rack. I've been reading from Discover Magazine, the June 2021 edition of Discover. I'm Steve Sacco. So long until next time.